Good.
Can you ID yourself with the mics? How are you doing?
Good.
Christian, can you just ID yourself with the mics to say your name?
What do you mean? Oh, Christian Bale.
So they can identify your voices later.
Was there any doubt for a second that you would be putting on the mask and cape again?
Not in my mind. I don't know if anybody else has a doubt about that. Something to ask Chris. He might have had a doubt. I didn't.
Did it feel in any way familiar or good or natural, or this is what I should be doing? I was born to play this part or something.
You know, that's pushing it to say I was born to play this part, but I definitely only have an interest in playing Batman the way that Chris Nolan likes to have him portrayed. And I think that this second movie has surpassed the first, and it stands as a great movie regardless of genre.
Years ago, Michael Keane said when he did the sequel that the suit was a lot more heavier. Was it this time for you? Was it a little more comfortable for you? Or?
It was much more comfortable. It was heavier, but it was actually much more comfortable. There's like 110 parts to this one. There were three to the original. I can move my head. It was more mobile. But for the KC fighting method that we use as the martial art, the suit actually was compatible with that, whereas in the first one, I was having to fight against the suit in order to be able to do the fight sequences. In every way, it was more advanced. And I think also more in keeping with images that the military have of future soldiers and their gear.
So that scene with Morgan Freeman then is kind of art imitating life, giving you the new improved suit, telling you you can move.
Yes, exactly, yeah. I mean, there were certain, I mean, obviously the suit has to evolve, but there were certain just very personal requests that I'd made. And I know Chris had been very adamant, as well about, we got to be able to move the head, Batman's never moved his head in any of the movies, So, yeah.
I'm sure it's been, the overused expression is the elephant in the room and all the interviews is talking about working with Heath. But I'm really curious about how you guys worked out what is essentially two parts of the same personality, because I came away thinking either one of them could have been the other person and could have been saying those things
right
to the other person. Was there some interplay going on there that you guys discovered that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a great dynamic. The Joker is just gleeful to come up against Batman, because everyone else has been too easy. He's an intelligent psychopath. He's bent on chaos and destruction, and if that means self-destruction, so be it. Impossible to leverage him because he's not looking for anything but living in the moment and living in that anarchy. He's completely uncompromising, as is Batman, but Batman does have this one rule of he will not kill. But he's in conflict often with himself about how far and how violent he can be, because he does embrace violence to an extreme degree and has to counter that with the altruism of do good and the inherited philanthropy of his parents. But absolutely, he the Joker comes closer than anybody has to provoking Batman to break that one rule.
Did you in rehearsal see that his character, because when you think of the Joker, I think of Jack Nicholson, and this is nothing like Jack Nicholson. So did he spring it on you when it came time to shoot, or did you see this character develop through rehearsal?
I knew that the tone of Chris Nolan's Gotham was one that we never wanted to have caricatures, and we never wanted to have the actor kind of peeking through and winking at the audience, and showing, hey, what a great time I'm having playing this, funny, larger-than-life character, We wanted to stay serious and dramatic with each of the portrayals of every single character. Heath was wonderful with that, He completely immersed himself. He stayed under, when he was the Joker, he was the Joker throughout. Absolute commitment to that. And he's portrayed him in a way that has not been portrayed before. He has this kind of anarchic, punk, Clockwork Orange approach to it. And he's done such a damn good job that, you know, if Chris decides to make a third movie, he set himself a real challenge of how do you up the ante with any villain after Heath's Joker.
The Rachel character in the movie says something about how Bruce Wayne needs Batman. And that struck me as strange because I think the way you play it, I think your Bruce Wayne would be perfectly happy if there were peace in Gotham and he could put away the uniform. And I wanted to know what you thought about that.
Well, I think that that's what he believes, and he wishes for that. He wishes for Batman to become obsolete. And the beacon of hope, you know, for that, the beacon of light is Harvey Dent. That, you know, Batman should not be necessary. In a good civilized society, Batman isn't necessary. So if an elected official can have integrity and can stamp down on corruption and crack down on crime, then Batman is not necessary, and he can return to his life as Bruce Wayne, which has become very void. He's a lonely man. He's suffered a great deal. The more that he commits to Batman, the more he pays a price in his own personal life. But I do see her point because I think he has an addiction to it as well. I think it ain't, whilst his ideal is to leave this Batman creature behind, I think that it's become an addiction as well. There's duality throughout, you know? I mean, throughout everything, you know? And I love that with Chris's work. You know, I mean, there really are three sides to Bruce Wayne. But then even with the other characters, like with Alfred, you know, there's duality there. I mean, he's his butler. He serves him. But he's also the transferred father figure, you know, and a mentor to him. Clearly, there's a duality, obviously, in a very blatant way with Harvey Dent and Two-Face.
I think we talked a bit about this at Batman Begins, about the sense of the vigilante. And I think that comes out a lot more in this, the misgivings that people have of turning things over to a vigilante.
Right.
That reflects something in the zeitgeist today, the farther we've gotten from 9/11, or maybe the experiences that we've gone through because of the Iraq War, maybe taking matters into our own hands isn't exactly the way to do it.
I think when there are questionable motives as well, absolutely there's an argument for Bruce Wayne's altruism and what he's trying to do, but there's also an argument for this is a selfish endeavor, of him kind of curing himself of his own pain and anger through the character of Batman. But I think that any good story will generally always have a correlation to many events that are going on around the world, but I think that anything like that, I don't like for filmmakers to tell people what they see as being the correlation. I think that's for other people to make up their minds.
Well, this
about
one that seems kind of specific is the domestic spying, but where he triangulates all the phones. This is only for this one episode.
Yes.
I'm just wondering what your take is on that, and does it give it sort of a solid definition of where the filmmakers stand on that? Because it seems like it takes a stand on that issue.
I do understand. Chris is clearly the one to ask about this, but I think that there is a very fine line of what is the quickest way to solve a problem, I mean, much as with Batman asking himself his own, questioning his own rule, what is the quickest way to finish the Joker and assure that nobody else dies? Well, it is to kill him. However, he is lowering himself by doing so. But the ethical question of would he not be saving others if he was to break his own rule, and at what point does it become, the principles become selfish? And likewise with that clearly, there's an absolute invasion of privacy. But is he able to save lives by invading that privacy? And these are questions that absolutely are topical, for America today. I don't feel like it completely takes a stand because Bruce Wayne very much looks to Alfred and to Lucius as father figures and as mentors, and clearly Lucius is saying to him, you pushed this one too far.
But
you know, this is gone. You know,
he's successful because of that system. I mean, it's clear to us through that sequence that without that system, he probably would not have been successful.
Right. It works, but is it the right way?
Returning to this for the second time, was it physically easier and mentally easier, knowing what you're getting yourself into this time? Or?
Well, I think that this movie is more about mind games than the first. You know, clearly we didn't want to be treading water. I mean, in the same way with the movie, the character had to evolve, and it did so in a very clear fashion. Physically, less demanding, because I was not coming from such a place of weakness as I was before the first one, and also just having more experience with the fighting styles. So I was able to do all of the fighting sequences myself, and easier because of the bat suit. I could breathe, you know, that helps a great deal when you're doing stunts.
Talking while we were waiting for the junket to start, and it's so interesting that we're having this junket like 2 days before the end of the month, because the actual strike is scheduled to start if they don't come together. I wanted to know what your take on that is. And
well, my understanding is, no, I mean, the strike can't start July 1st. You know, the studios can do a lockout July 1st, but SAG has to get authorization from its members, and then 3 weeks after authorization, then a strike can begin. So there's a long ways off before a strike could actually happen, if I have my information correct.
And what's your take on it, and how much do you actually get your hands dirty in that whole process?
I have been working on 2 movies. I've been doing a movie, Public Enemies, and I've now begun working on Terminator. Whilst I'm making movies, the rest of the world kind of ceases to exist for me. So I am getting tidbits of information from people. I'm obviously, you know, asking questions and finding out, but I'm no reliable source to go to for information on the strike. I mean, clearly, look, I hope there's nobody out there who wants to have a strike, you know? I hope that everybody wants to be able to make a deal. The industry has been reeling, you know, from the writer's strike. People are barely recovering from that. I cannot understand why anybody would actually be desiring a strike rather than being able to make a deal.
You mentioned Republic Enemies. That was, you didn't grow up with those characters in your folklore, not having grown up in here. So how much of a quick study did you have to become to figure out who indeed and what world they were embodying? And is it the real, is it reflecting the real history, or is it more the movie version of?
Well, I did have to be a quick study, you know. I wasn't aware of Melvin Purvis beforehand. I was aware of Dillinger. You know, I knew the circumstances around that the era, the Dust Bowl, and, you know, the crime syndicates. But Michael Mann is one of the most thorough researchers that I've ever come across. And so I had, you know, more than an abundance of information about it. Traveled to the FBI headquarters, went around Quantico, you know, met with the family of the character I was playing. We shot at all the locations where the actual events took place. It was uncanny on a number of occasions. We were filming on the actual dates where the gunfights happened, you know, in the same place at the same time. It stays true to the events, but as in with many movies, you know, in trying to condense a story into 2 hours, there's some license taken. But believe me, Michael is like an incredible private investigator in the way that he approaches his movie making and the nuances and the details that he's interested in, and does so well, you know. And I had a fantastic time working with him.
I was told your first job was working on a cereal commercial when you were 9. Do you remember any of that?
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember if that is correct. I did do that, yeah. It's kind of why I have very strong opinions about kids should not be working at such a young age.
Well, just before they take you away.
Why is that?
Why is what?
The kids shouldn't be working at commercials at a very young age.
I think that introducing children to a professional industry where they may not recognize the pressure, but very quickly they go into, and which is an adult industry. I would be very skeptical about putting anybody that I cared about, who was close to me, into this professionally at a young age. I would absolutely support it as a hobby and as an amateur pursuit, but to enter into the professional world is a whole different ball game.
Thank you, guys.
Just what about John Connor? What is it about this movie that would draw you into another possible franchise?
In a similar fashion to the way that Batman Begins revitalized and reinvented, even though with Terminator we are, of course, continuing a mythology, we're not ignoring a mythology as we did with Batman. I see there as being great potential for reinvention and revitalization of the mythology of it. And that's what I'm aiming to do. That's what I feel like our responsibility is. Otherwise, there is no point in making it.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks. Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you.